Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I'm very happy to sit with you in meditation. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes, and we're going to start very soon. So please take your seat and get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in a chair, which is also completely fine. And if you sit in a chair, please sit with your feet flat on the floor. And as you get settled, I want to introduce to you one of my very favorite topics, which is called the six paramitas, or six perfections, sometimes also translated as the six transcendent actions. And we'll look at one each over the next 6 weeks. So if this sounds intriguing to you, the next 6 weeks are going to be a delight. I know they will be for me because I've been studying and thinking about the paramitas for probably 25 years, and I have yet to experience one moment of feeling like, oh yeah, I got that. They continue to deepen. As you know, this is called the Open Heart Project. When we sit in meditation, we are actually not practicing simply mindfulness, which means focus, concentration, the ability to place your mind on the object of your choosing and then hold it there. We're also practicing open-heartedness, and we do that by sitting with ourselves exactly as we are. We're not trying to recast ourselves or change ourselves or make ourselves into something, whatever it is we think we ought to be. No, not at all. And if this is your first time sitting, you'll see exactly how we do this shortly. But instead, we're just being with ourselves. That's an open-hearted gesture. And we're doing that for many reasons, one of which is so that we can soften toward ourselves, so that when we go into our lives, we can soften toward others, which enables us to then enact or manifest the six paramitas or transcendent actions, the six ways of demonstrating open-heartedness off the cushion. The six paramitas are generosity, which we'll look at this week, discipline, which we'll look at next week, everyone's favorite subject, patience, exertion, meditation, meaning absorption in this case, and wisdom. The paramitas are interesting. They sort of open and tighten, are soft and fierce. Generosity has the quality of expansiveness and openness and sweetness. And then we go to discipline, which has the quality of sort of sharpness and precision and fierceness. So we're not just trying to be nice people. We're trying to be powerful people, useful people, brilliant people, effective people, loving people. And as you know, if you've been alive for more than 6 or 8 months, love takes both softness and fierceness. So one of the things that I found interesting, and I promise I will not make this too terribly long, is that there are sort of three stars of the world of open-heartedness, or three figures, three characters in which you can envision yourself. You can envision yourself as all three, or you can pick one. There are sort of three leaders when it comes to bringing more open-heartedness to the world. And in order of increasing importance, in other words, we're going to start with the least important, the first figure that brings more open-heartedness to the world is called a king. A king goes out in front of his or her people and leads the way. The king goes first and then shows others how to cross to the other shore of goodness and decency and sanity. The good king, the kind of kings that we want. The kings meaning king and or queen. The second kind of leader of open-heartedness is called the boatman or boat person. And that's the kind of leader that goes with others. Rows the boat full of other people trying to convey all of us together to the other shore of sanity and decency. And the third kind of leader of open-heartedness, and the most important, the most esteemed, is called the shepherd, who opens the gate for others to cross through to the other side, makes sure everyone has gone through the gate, and then the shepherd goes last and closes the gate behind, but not before making sure that everyone has crossed over to the shores of decency and sanity. So all three of those ways of enacting the paramitas are important, and at different times in your life, you're going to be the king slash queen. At other times, you're going to be a boatman. Yet at other times, you're going to feel called upon to be the shepherd. And yet other times, you're going to be one of the people or all of the above. So I found it useful. I like categories. So the first paramita in the category of paramitas, generosity, does not have the quality of I have a lot, you have a little. I have worked really hard to get as much stuff as possible. Let me sort of pull like pulling teeth. Let me pull one little thing that I probably don't need anyway out of my stash and give it to you. I hope you like it. You're welcome. It doesn't have that quality of I have a lot, you have a little. You're welcome. Generosity is rather imagined this way. You have everything. That's the starting point. You got it all. You have everything. You have every form of wealth imaginable. Okay, maybe you don't have every dollar in the world or every form of currency, but you have every form of brilliance. You have every form of kindness. You have every form of power. You have all that, whether you feel that way or not right now. You have this endless store of love and compassion and fierceness and potency. So as such, you can afford to give something in every situation, including to yourself, because generosity begins with what we extend towards ourselves. Can't be miserly towards ourselves and beneficent toward others. So when we start with that premise of I have unending riches, generosity is quite natural. Sure. What do you need? I got it. Let me go find it. Here it is. It's easy. It's a delight. It's a joy. I think I have exactly what you're looking for. And there's a sense of just like when you give someone the present that they've been longing for of, I think I might be happier than you that I just gave you this present. So that's the ground of generosity, is a sense of personal richness. And then in the Buddhist view, you can give one of three gifts. Generosity can take one of three forms. The first is the form of stuff. Someone is cold, you give them a sweater. Someone is hungry, you give them some food. Someone is poor, you give them some money. It's pretty straightforward. It's especially useful when the gift is wanted. In other words, it's not what you think the person needs, it's what they need. That takes an open heart right there to notice that. It's actually quite personal to give something. Material goods can have this sense of, well, I'm a philanthropic person, and so I give to charities. Great. Please continue to do that. But there's another form of generosity in the material world that has a very personal quality that comes from connecting with the recipient heart to heart. Like if you give money to homeless people that ask you for it, great. That's a choice that most of us who live in cities have to make. Great. It's one thing to sort of drop money, and it's another thing to give money and look at the person. However you choose to do it, it's not an uncomplicated thing. I'll tell you a story that I told recently when I was teaching a retreat just a few weeks ago about material generosity, and then I'll go through the other two, and then we will sit. And if you don't have time for this, skip forward to the sitting, because that is the most important part and the most direct manifestation of generosity that there is. A long time ago, long, 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 long time ago, I was in a very bad car accident. You might have heard me mention this if you've known me. It was a very important event in my life, because nobody expected me to live. It was really a serious accident, and a car accident. And I woke up in intensive care. I'd been in intensive care for 2 weeks. I was like, she's going to live. She's going to die. Nobody knew. However, at one point, the doctor said, you should go say goodbye to her. You know, who knows what happened? Thank you, doctors and nurses, for care and the universe. I feel very lucky to be alive. That is not the point of my story, although I did receive quite a bit of generosity. When I came out of, when I woke up in intensive care, I was covered in machinery, tubes in my nose and monitors and beeping, and, you know, I was really hurt. And also, like, the most minor injuries I had were like lacerations in my head, here and here. So my hair was shaved here and here. And though I felt quite bad in all sorts of ways, this was also embarrassing. I know that may sound silly, but I felt not only injured, I felt extremely undignified. And the woman who cut my hair somehow got wind of the accident and came to the hospital and just cut my hair really short. And I felt so good, so much. I felt fresh. I felt restored to a sense of dignity in as much as one can in such a circumstance. So that was a material gift. But I think you can see what I mean when I say it can be very personal. It can be very heartfelt. It's meant for the recipient. So that's an example of giving a gift of material goods that is different than writing a check to a charity, which is also good. The second gift that you can give is called giving the gift of fearlessness, which doesn't mean that you yourself are fearless. And then you're like, hey, everybody, it's not that bad. Cheer up. Because, you know, things are nutty out there, y'all. Giving the gift of fearlessness perhaps begins with you being willing to be unafraid of your fear and going out into the world as you are, brilliant, confused, afraid, brave, the whole thing, and unafraid of none of it. That is a very direct and powerful way to convey the gift of fearlessness to others. It is said in my Buddhist tradition that a warrior is one who is not afraid of herself. So when you are not afraid of yourself, including all of your dings and knocks and injuries and genius and brilliance and luminosity, you're not afraid of any of that. That's a warrior. And a warrior imparts fearlessness simply by her presence. So something to think about. And the third and final way of exhibiting generosity is called giving the gift of dharma, or knowledge, wisdom. And that means, you know, whatever it is you know. It means sharing what you know. What you know, not what you read. And further, sharing what you know, not what you read, with people who want to know it. Not with people who you think should know it or might be impressed by your knowledge or should want to know it, but who actually need to know it in that moment. Then you share it with them and you've given them the gift of wisdom that is in the right moment. They might not even notice that you gave it to them, but you dropped it at the right moment. And that's a very potent gift, the gift of wisdom, of course. So generosity, first paramita, material, give the gift of material stuff, gift of fearlessness, gift of dharma. Next week, tune in for a discussion of the paramita of discipline. Spoiler alert, discipline in the Buddhist sense is synonymous with joy. Okay, let's practice. So let's begin our practice by rousing a sense of generosity toward ourselves. And you can do that by just beginning with rousing a sense within that you're going to give this meditation to yourself. Now is my time to meditate. Everything else can wait, because for 10 minutes, everything else can wait, unless your hair's on fire, in which case, do something. But otherwise, this is for you. Give it to yourself. Let there be a sense of meditation as a gift, not as a to-do. The hands rest on the legs, palms down, and the hands simply rest. They're not working for us. They're just at ease. Let the lower half of your body be heavy with a sense of sinking down into the cushion or chair. We're on earth. We're not trying to zing off into another dimension. Let's just first at least try to be in this dimension. So here we are. Let yourself be here. Feel the earth sort of rise up to hold you. And give yourself to Mother Earth. Even if you're 30 stories up, Mother Earth is still below. And from the waist up, let yourself be light and have a sense of heaven, sky above your head. The back is straight and strong because it is strong. Even if you have back problems, it's still quite strong. And soften the front body, the belly, the area around the heart, the throat. Let the shoulders relax a lot. Nothing to carry or haul. The chin is parallel with the ground. The mouth is closed. The lips and teeth are slightly parted. Let the muscles of speech relax. The tongue, the jaw, the throat, not needed, because you don't have to talk, which is a delight. And when you listen in, there is no one talking. Actually, it is silent in here. So notice that. It's quiet. And you can fill with your own silence. The breath is natural in and out through the nose, meaning no breathing technique. Of course, if you have a cold or allergies and you need to breathe through your mouth, go ahead, you do you. Otherwise, breathing in and out through the nose. And in this practice, the eyes are open because this is a practice of wakefulness. And it is hard to be awake. When your eyes are closed, it is hard to be kind. It is hard to know how to be generous when your eyes are closed. So the eyes are open. The gaze is cast down to a spot in front, up to 6 feet or 2 meters around, or whatever is comfortable given where your screen is, if you're in front of a screen. And let the eyes be really soft. You don't have to reach out for anything with the eyes. and you're not trying to laser focus. While holding the eyes steady, what can you see end to end in the visual field? Let all of that in. There's a sense of vision mixing with space rather than looking for something in space. Please enjoy that, if that makes sense. And the crown of the head reaches up a little bit. Let your attention rest on the breath, which means feel the breath, not observe the breath. Feel the inhale. Feel the exhale. That's all we're doing, is sitting here and breathing. Let the breath carry you. The mind will continue to make thoughts. Cool, that's what it does. No problem. Don't try to change that. Most of your thoughts will come and go. You don't need to intercede. However, should you notice that you have become completely absorbed in thought, to the point where you have completely forgotten about your breath, now you want to intercede. First of all, it's great. You just woke up. Yay. So you notice you're absorbed in thought. Oh, you notice that. That's the first step. Then you let go. The letting go is a very gentle, simple gesture, but it's also very definite. Bye-bye. Gently bring your attention back to the breath and begin again. Riding the breath. And that's all there is to it. So we'll sit together. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. I feel it. And thank you so much for practicing with each other. We are a real sangha or community. That means a lot to me. So thank you.